You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 7th of March. The Jazz are in Indiana to get ready for the Pacers, who are stunningly similar, yet so very different than the Utah Jazz. How much help did the Jazz get last night in the playoff push? We'll look at that. Is there a value to a mid-range game? There might be. Plus, the mental health discussion continues and some thoughts on it from an inexperienced source. It's all coming up next on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. So glad to be with you today and so interested in having you be a part of this program and hopefully fostering some good conversation on your end as well. Really, that's the hope so often on these programs, is to foster those decisions. This is Locked On Jazz. It's your daily conversation about the Utah Jazz with a little expertise, a little insight, a little geeky numbers, a little look behind the number, the curtains as well. I say that today about fostering conversation because, for example, this conversation you and I have been having for a while now about Rudy Gobert and his value and the value of a defensive player and the impact on games and the impact. This is the same conversation that I had yesterday with Jazz assistant coach Zach Guthrie, who's really bright, and trying to figure out if there's a way to actually prove this. And a lot of these times, a lot of the theories that I throw out here on the show, I'm fortunate enough that the Jazz staff is nice enough to me and humors me enough that they'll listen to my ideas, which is not that they're going to do anything with it, but that they're willing to foster the conversation as well. I have nowhere near the expertise that they do. I have nowhere near the knowledge they have. I have a total lack of understanding. And hopefully I come to them in a manner of, here's a thought. Antonio Lang and I are having an ongoing debate about the impact teammates have on a player. It's a wonderful circumstance for me to be in where I can have these conversations with these guys. I mean, it's really cool. I feel very blessed that they're nice enough to me that they'll respect my opinion enough that they'll listen to it. I truly mean that. And I hope I don't overstep my bounds when I hold these conversations with them. But it's a wonderful circumstance. So I share these thoughts with you. Last night, I went to dinner with Ron, and one of our conversation pieces is our second segment of today's show. So I hope as though that when I say, and the third one, honestly, is a lot, the segment today on mental health is a lot of things that I just, while reading Kevin Love's piece and reading DeMar DeRozan's piece and been thinking about, and then I have an off beaten path thought on it that probably will get me in trouble, but I do want to share more, as, again, food for thought, not stark opinion. So I hope that all makes sense to you. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for you committing the time to this as well. And I hope it does feel as though you're part of a conversation that's going on many levels. Today's show is brought to you by my good friends over the store at 6200 South and 20th East, and then also by Tyson and the crew at Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross. All right, let's get to last night. I still am not entirely sure what we wanted to have happen last night with the Clippers and the Pelicans, but I will tell you this. The Pelicans have changed the dynamic of this playoff race. As I think many of you are regular listeners, you're probably used to this conversation, but in case you are not, on February 23rd, I broke all of the remaining games into five categories. Certain wins, should wins, which were 60 to 80% chance wins according to 538, pick'ems 40 to 60, unlikelies, and no chances. The thing that has happened, the big game changer that has happened since I did this on the 23rd of February, is that the New Orleans Pelicans who had a brutal schedule of 8 games that were unlikely wins and 2 games of no chance wins, have played 3 of those 8 unlikely wins, which is the most of anyone, and won 3 of them. New Orleans has completely changed the dynamic in this playoff race. With their win last night against Clippers, they went into that with a 31 win percentage as of February 23rd. I'm sure it's up now. But they have now beaten Milwaukee, San Antonio, and the Clippers, all in games in which they were not favored. Last night, the Thunder lost in a game that was classified as a pick'em, though, it was at 42%. The Thunder have not blinked yet. They have won the games they're supposed to and basically lost. That's a pick'em. And Denver's loss last night to Dallas, which had everybody very, very excited, honestly, not that big a deal. That was a pick'em 56% game. You're not going to win all of those. Now, worth noting that Denver thus far in pick'em games is 0-2. Okay, so that has some relevance. Denver had the Houston game, which was at 44%, and didn't get that one. They are, now to their credit, they're 1-0 in unlikely games because they won that Cleveland game. So they get that one back, but we'll see over time. I mean, you can't just completely look at this you just flip and flop. It's over the process. So that's it's nice that Denver lost that game for us. However, it's not like this was one of those games that they were set to win. This was a pick 'em game. They're 0-2 in pick 'em games. Those are supposed to be 50% games. Interesting little note is all of a sudden in pick 'em games, the Western Conference playoff teams are 2-4. In should wins, there are certain wins, they're 8-0. In should wins, they're 9-4. Some of those losses are against each other. In unlikelies, they're 6-5, and no one's played a no-chance game yet. So the takeaway here is at this time, New Orleans is really making a pretty strong push outside, and Anthony Davis is incredible right now. I mean, that was remarkable last night. Oh, I didn't update. Portland won last night in as expected. That was a should win. Portland had 11 should win games. They're 4-0 so far in those. That's money. Portland has had a stretch here where they had 6 straight games they should win, and they have won all of them. Portland, I think, is an unlikely team to fall out. San Antonio, I still think, is a little rocky. Oklahoma City has an incredibly easy schedule, and they're not good, but they're so very talented and have so much athleticism that they seem to get through those games. Denver has 9 should-win games left. That will be the key. They're 1-1 in those so far. Can they win the games they're supposed to win? That's going to be the issue. If Denver wins the games they're supposed to win, they're going to be hard to knock out. Portland seems to be separating themselves and still has a soft schedule. New Orleans, just to their credit, still have a tough schedule and just haven't blinked. And the Clippers have 11 games left that are classified as should wins, 60-80%. And if they win those, the fact of the matter is, if Denver and the Clippers win the games they're supposed to, even with Utah's soft schedule, I don't think Utah can catch them. I mean, it's just the numbers get almost impossible. So someone's got to slip. Tonight, Denver is playing the Cavaliers. Denver has a 62% chance to win that game, according to the 538 numbers when we did this. That goes into one of those should wins. So Denver's on a back-to-back, back home from playing in Dallas last night, where they lost, where Jokic did not play the fourth quarter. Bizarre. And that is a should win. New Orleans plays Sacramento tonight on the back end of a back-to-back. That's actually classified as a pick'em at 59%, right on the edge of that. So that's, again, need someone to slip. And the Jazz are in Indiana, which is a pick'em also, but at 42%. So pretty big difference between those two pick'ems, but you pick arbitrary numbers and they go into it. So the Jazz have five pick'em games. They really need to win three of them. They've already lost one against Houston. The Pelicans coming up is another one. The Lakers game at home and the Warriors game at home are pick'ems. Woo! 538 is aggressive with how good they think the Jazz are because they've been playing well. But so somehow, Indiana, at New Orleans, might be at L.A., home against the Warriors. Jazz have got to get to the number I think they're going to have to get to, have to try to win three of these games. Oh my gosh. Seems insane. All right, let's Jazz and the Pacers match up and some value to the mid-range. Coming up. Today's show is brought to you by my friends at the store at 6200 South and 20th East. What I love about the store is you can feel the local Jeff and Scott's feel on it. And as simple as Rich's Bagels being there. As simple as the tortilla chips that the woman made at the wedding that they saw and then they made, had her make it. As simple as June pies from Heber being brought into the store in the first outlet in the valley. As simple as the incredible pico de gallo they make that if you walk behind the vegetable section and you look around the corner, there's a woman literally chopping the vegetables right there at the store and doing it. As simple as going in the very back and seeing their incredible spice, their great meat selection, and the various people, Snake River and everybody else that they bring their meats in from. That's what I truly love about the store at 6200 South and 20th East is the fact that there's a local feel to it. The fact that you guys are buying Mudslide cookies so much that we're making them make Mudslide cookies every day. Mudslide cookies every day for the world. That is our mission in life. We have weird missions. We want people to buy Ionics from Murdoch Hyundai, and we want people to buy Mudslide cookies from the store. It's a weird life that I live. But truly, they are, I think. Let me know. I'm demanding the demand on Mudslide cookies to be there every day. They're the best cookie in town. By the way, their candy section in the back, I'm just going to make you fat. Their candy section in the back, my wife is in love with the dark chocolate sea salt popcorn. Little things. I like their just dark chocolate sea salt. All right, that is the store, 6200 South and 20th East. The Indiana and Utah, to me, Ron and I watched Indiana play Milwaukee on the plane. I think they're really similar. So I don't know the status of Darren Collison, and that changes a lot in this game. Victor Oladipo is struggling without Darren Collison. So if Collison they said he'll likely miss another week a day ago. So I don't know if that, I think that means he's missed their last nine games, and it sounds as though he's not playing this week. So that's pretty good news for the Jazz. It's interesting how Oladipo seems to need Collison. But when you, Here's my point. You look at them play. Corey Joseph, Ricky Rubio. Somewhat similar. They really are, actually. If you look at their shot charts and a bunch of things, they're pretty similar. They're a little bit different styles, but they both kind of play the game the same way. The Donovan Mitchell, Victor Oladipo. Very similar. Joe Ingles, Bogdanovic, who's really good, by the way. Bojan Bogdanović is, you're looking at the Utah Jazz trying to figure out why are they winning, and one of the reasons is because nobody realizes how good Joe Ingles is. Let me tell you what, one reason Indiana's winning is because Bogdanović is really good. Picked up by Washington last year at the trade deadline after being in Brooklyn. He scored about 19 points a game in February, dropped 20 the other night. He single-handedly beat Milwaukee. He's really good. Okay. Thaddeus Young, Derek Favors, pretty similar at this point. Miles Turner, Rudy Gobert, similar. Rudy's better, but they're similar. It's interesting just watching them play how similar. There's a lot of things that these two teams do that are really, really similar. Now, they play very – the Indiana plays with a style of play early, play late. So, in other words, if Oladipo gets the outlet, he's on a sprint up the floor playing in accelerated pace, coming right at you, really, really coming at you early. And you better build that defensive wall or he's getting by you. Then, if they get in the half court, they're going to really work the possession. They're 19th in the league in pace of play overall, and that seems to be really appropriate because of the fact that they play in between these two models. It's always been a philosophy of Nate McMillan. They shoot the three great, they just don't shoot it very often. They're the fourth best team in the league defending the three, which is really interesting. If you look at them offensively, they are best. If you turn it over, and they'll get you. As the game slows down, if we can keep them slow, they're not as good. So overall, offensively, I think they're the ninth best team in the league. After turnovers, they're the fourth best team in the league. They are seventh best at forcing turnovers, and we commit them. We're 21 in the league. So that's a key part of this game tonight. They're 11th best offensively, so better than they, right about where they are for the season, after misses, and they slipped to 13th late. They were so bad late in the game against Milwaukee, they didn't run anything. If you're interested in us in that, we are 19th in the league offensively. After a team's made shot, we're 26th. After a miss, we're 10th. After a turnover, we're 22nd. So you wonder if our defense spurs our offense. The answer is yes. Our defense truly spurs our offense. Now, how's that been? Is it any different than since Rudy's come back? Is a legitimate question since everything. It's like we had a it's like born again Christians have their like rebirth date. We had our rebirth date on January 19th. Like that's where we now look at all numbers. Since January 19th, and there'll be a really interesting number here for you. We've brought this up on the air a few times. It's part of the reason we're so good defensively, but I'll share this with you. We are still, since January 18th, we're 18th offensively. We're kind of still in the same place. We, after a made shot, are back to being the slowest pace of play team in the league, but we're 18th in the league after made shot. After a defensive rebound, we're the eighth best team in the league. So if we can get misses, our offense really goes. They're just all related. And after a turnover, 20th. Here's the interesting number for you about the Jazz. After a turnover, we're the third best defensive team in the league. Since Rudy came back. The reason is because we commit that Euro foul and we put him in the half court. And we're probably the best team in the league at committing that Euro foul. After a made shot, this is why we win games by a lot. Our defense is almost impenetrable. We're allowing 0.94 points per possession after a made shot. The league average is 1.05. We're 1.1 points better than league average. We're at 0.94. Toronto's number two at 0.99. Milwaukee, since Prunty took over, is third at one. If we're off a defensive rebound, we're not quite as good. We're the 11th best defense. We're just right in the middle of the pack. So interesting kind of – we're all feeding off ourselves with everything. I don't know. At least I thought that was interesting. Math discussion with my guy Ron Boone last night. So if you're playing a game – and there's going to be 100 possessions, the three has incredible value. Incredible value, because it's worth 50% more. If I'm playing you for one possession, it doesn't matter. Like, if I score, I win. Doesn't matter if I shoot a two or three. The only thing that matters then is field goal percentage. Does that make sense? Right? Like, so if we're going to, if I'm going to try to beat you over 100 possessions, then I'm going to start using math. I got a larger sample size. I want the most points possible. But now if we're down to one possession, it's 0-0. We're playing a one possession game. It doesn't matter if I shoot a three or if I shoot a two. I just want the highest percentage shot because I win if I score. Now, if you're playing two possessions, does it, are you better off just taking the highest percentage shot? Or does the three start to if you matter more? If we're playing a three-possession game, where is the number when there's so few possessions left in a game that the numbers don't have, the numbers of threes aren't as advantageous? Because I think this is what Houston's done, is that when Houston gets in close games, you're going to see Chris Paul starting to take his mid-range shot. But he doesn't take it. He doesn't take that snake under mid-range shot anymore. He's the best mid-range shooter in the NBA. But if we get down to 92-92, five possessions left, and Chris Paul can make two of five field goals or three of five field goals and get you 6 points, maybe that's, you know, better than trying to make two of five 40% threes, which you're probably not going to make at that point. Neither of those numbers quite. You're not going to shoot 60. You're not going to shoot 40. Like, where is the number? And maybe it doesn't exist. Well, it does exist. It exists at one possession. Does it exist at two? Does it exist at three possession? Where's the number if we reduce the game down to this few possessions that you're better off taking a mid-range shot? Does that make sense? It's kind of a fun little discussion. Do you guys feel sorry for Ron Boone that he has to sit there at dinner with me with a really fancy shrimp cocktail and he's sitting there having calamari and I'm having salmon afterwards and then this is the conversation that he's stuck having with me? Yeah, I do too. I hear you. Today's show brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. Tyson and his crew do such a great job at Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross. Chevy is, you know, bread and butter to Utah, bread and butter to the Murdochs. They have been together, believe it or not, for 91 years. I mean, that is pretty, pretty cool stuff. For 91 years, they have been together. And Murdoch Madness is now underway at the Murdoch locations. Part of Murdoch Madness, by the way, is their no regrets policy. So you get car washes for life, safety inspections for life, 5-day exchange policy, famous price match guarantee. That's the great thing that goes on at Murdoch Chevy. That's what Tyson's, what the Murdoch family's all about. Murdoch and Chevy have just been connected. Tyson, when he comes out there, he's got his guys all working for you. You'll see it. You can feel Tyson when you're there. He's such a good dude. Fun conversation he and I have had over the times when I've stopped by and visited over at Woods Cross. Their truck lineup is you know, no one's matching what Chevy's doing right now, right? I mean, with the Silverado, the light-duty half-ton Silverado, whether it's the heavy-duty Silverado, the mid-size truck Colorado, the Colorado diesel, the unibody frame, which is safer. The SUV lineup is terrific as well. You got the Suburban, then the Tahoe, the Equinox, the Traverse, which now has three rows of seats, and the Trax. Pretty solid stuff. It's all going on at Woods Cross at the Murdoch Chevy. Stop by. Say hi to Tyson when you're there. You know what? Just give Tyson. I mean, he's a big dude, but just go ask see Tyson. Give him a little punch on the side of the arm. Say, good to see you. It'd be really weird if everybody started doing that to him and see how he reacted to that. It'd be kind of funny. I'd kind of laugh. All right, I think there's something wonderful going on in our NBA world with DeMar DeRozan coming out and talking about depression and Kevin Love talking about the panic attack he just had. If you read it in the Players Tribune, it's pretty moving. I think Michelle Roberts deserves a great deal of credit for this because she's the union head. She opened it up by opening up that headline. I think this is really important. The stigma the stigma that exists, you know, if someone says that they need to go see a therapist or if they have mental health or if I'm going to sign to a free agent. Or, you know, the answer should be we want to help these players. And frankly, for many of these players, I would guess that some of the things that are probably causing some mental health issues are things that have also driven them to be great, right? A lot of them probably have some tough stories on life in which the basketball floor was the place where they got away from all of their whatever struggles were going on in their life. That's often the case with athletes, right? You know, I think for these poor gymnasts, they were just dealing with such hell. Getting on the bar was probably the greatest thing that they could have in their life because it meant that they were away from that evil monster. That's a different issue. But, I mean, often the playing field is like where when other things are real and hard for you that you get in there. Now, I'm not versed in this at all. I don't have any expertise in it. I have, you know, other than that, I always feel that I am the epitome of the Rob Thomas Matchbox 20 song, that I'm not crazy, I'm just a little bit unwell aspect of things. I have not had any of these. Obviously, I think we all have close friends who have. And so for public figures to be coming forward, I think it's really, really important. I do think the thing I'm concerned about, I am not an expert here. That's kind of where I started this, and I probably shouldn't be venturing down this road. But I'm just kind of curious. This is where I really open the show today with food for thought. So I'm concerned that we're characterizing mental health really incorrectly as a society when we talk about it. And I don't know enough. Somebody else who's more educated than me could probably be better here. You can tell I'm pretty tentative right now. The number one, so mental health, like Kevin Love's talking about having a panic attack. There's other players, you know, like we have, I know some people who's really close friend whose son got such anxiety, he'd go to school every day and couldn't get himself through the classroom door. Like he just could, like, it's just too much. Just something was like something, mental health. Depression that DeMar DeRozan, just using as a reference point, talks about, that's mental health. Do I really want to go here? Please do not get your card carrying. You're taking my guns. Approached what I'm about to say. I don't mean it that way. Too often, when we're talking about mental health, it's because the NRA's playbook, so that we don't take their guns, or you don't have your guns taken, is to blame mental health, not guns. That may be accurate or inaccurate. Okay, I'm not into that debate. I got my opinions. I may be right, I may be wrong. I don't have any idea if I'm right. I mean, I think there's an anger issue. I think there's a violence issue in our society that's pretty tremendous, that's beyond mental health. And I've read some really interesting stuff recently that basically these shooters that's not mental health. But I do worry right now that since we happen to have a school shooting on a daily basis, it feels, or at least a major shooting on a monthly or weekly basis, and every time the conversation, because it's part of the playbook, I got it, I understand why, to then refer to that as mental health, that when we then bring up an issue like Kevin Love did about an anxiety attack, which is a mental health issue, or DeMar DeRozan about depression, which is a mental health issue, or this child I just referenced who has the anxiety to the point where the pressure to literally walk through the classroom door is freezing to him, or I know other people whose kids literally just getting up, it's just hard, right? Like, that we've turned mental health into something That to me is what we should be addressing and trying to help people with. And because our talking point on this gun issue is mental health, that we've suddenly taken, if you have a mental health issue, you're about to walk into a school. Now, maybe I'm totally crazy on this, and you can tell me that, and feel free to tweet me. Don't do it with anger, though, please, because I'm not trying to take anything from you. I'm just presenting something that, to no one's fault, really, I feel like we've lost the mental. I'm so pleased how specific Kevin Love was in the article in the Players Tribune about what the mental health was issue. I'm so pleased at how specific DeMar DeRozan was in what that meant, because I'm concerned that on what is a very significant issue, that if anyone's heard about Gunn High School in Palo Alto, where the stress on our young kids have caused about 3-4 years ago, caused a suicide run, where we have a suicide rate in our kids that's higher than it's ever been before. We clearly either have a stress or mental health. I don't know how these all intermix together, but they're very real. And there's something going on in our society or the pressure, or maybe, who knows? Like, it could be in our chemicals. It could be in our, I don't know. But I do feel as though that the conversation piece, where 80 to 90% of the mental health conversation that is being done out of the NRA playbook of, anytime there's a shooting, it's a mental health issue. And so therefore, we're losing, because that's the prominent news story in America seemingly every month, we're losing the real issue of mental health. And that's where I saw great value in Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan. Please understand where that came from. And if you're angry right now, that's a problem. It really is, because if you're angry at me right now, I'm trying to foster a useful conversation with a innocent, not particularly well-educated, clarified thought that I had on an issue. And if we cannot have a society in which we share thoughts, we're useless. Have a great day.